and welcome to another episode of GT Radio Conversations with Tino. I'm very, very excited tonight. I have a great guest on the show. He's a good friend. He's been around a long time. He's a hard worker, great morals, and he's done a lot of things for Indian country. Welcome to the show, Harold Bogus. How are you, Harold?
I'm very doing very good. Tino, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So tell us a little bit about where you were born, what your family did, you know, where you got your work ethic from, all that stuff.
Sure. I was actually born and raised in a little town. Well, it used to be a little town south of Phoenix called Maricopa. And it was a small farming community up to about 2,000. Right now there's about 60,000 people here. It's not the farming community was no more. But I actually started, my parents harvest grain, and they were in the agricultural logistic business, hauling different types of agricultural products. They had a number of semis, harvesters, and my dad was a Marine, a 8-year Korean veteran. Towards the Korean War, he didn't actually fight in the war, but he was a staff sergeant. 8 years, and him and my mom met and moved here in the early 50s, and they started several businesses. Then they went into the agricultural logistic business and the harvesting business. My mom was a school teacher, and my work ethic started with them. I actually started in the grain fields as long as I can remember. I remember being out there when I was 5 years old, hanging around. But they actually put me working, driving a harvester when I was 12 years old. I was a big kid, still a big guy.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I, they taught me, you know, they taught me one thing, nothing in life is going to be ever for free. Another thing is never going to be easy. And but I learned the work ethic from them. My father, like, he was a 6'6", tall gentleman. My mom was a little short lady, but she ran the household and ran the business. And that's where I also learned a great respect for women in the workplace, because my mom has always worked. She's still alive. She's 86 years old. The only thing that frustrates her now is that the fact that she can't work no more. But I learned that from them. I learned that I have worked probably just about every day. I'm 58 years old since I was about 12 years old in some form or another. But I learned everything from them. I had to give them all the credit from giving me a great solid foundation.
Yeah, and the crop business wasn't an easy business, was it?
Oh no, it's feast or famine. You start in May, and you April, May, and you start harvesting barley, and then you go into wheat, and then once you went through wheat, you go into safflower, and then you go into milo maize, and then right after that, the cotton harvest started. We didn't pick cotton. I have cotton harvesters, but we hauled all the cotton seed. And that would go to about January, and then you held on till April, fixed and repaired all the equipment. And that's what we did on weekends. We got to play football, we got to play sports, but come Saturday morning, it didn't matter how late you were up at night, Saturday and Sunday, you were out there helping fix some equipment. So it was a constant grind, kind of like the casino business. You know, we deal with that feast or famine now sometimes. So it was a constant grind, never did stop.
Yeah, the farming business is a 24-hour business, just like the casino, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it never stops. I mean, there's some little lulls here and there, but once you're harvesting it, and then once you get ready to harvest, you have to start ready planting it again. And like I said, we didn't farm ourselves, but we did all the logistics for all the agriculture, and we did all of the harvesting in the local area. I went a couple of times to different states, but I just didn't get into that route. And about 2000, about 1991, 92, 93, something like that, we just decided to go different directions and not, it's a tough life. It's just a tough life, especially in Arizona where it's 120 degrees.
Yeah, it is a tough life.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit after that. You did some work before gaming. So you were like a special ed. You did a bunch of stuff, right?
Well, my first career, my very, very first career, I was going to be a special education teacher in high school and coach football. And actually, while I was going to college, I coached football in here in Maricopa, volunteer coach for 3 years. But, and unfortunately, I hate to say it like this, but unfortunately, what I learned very, very fast was I was not going to be able to, because the kids started coming along. I got married at an early age. I got married at 19, but we didn't start having kids till I was 23. And then I found out that, unfortunately, we weren't going to be able to raise a family and support kids on a teacher's salary, which is unfortunate.
Right.
So I branched out to my own. My parents had a trucking business, but I also branched out onto my own, and I did that. I didn't quite finish school. I had one semester left from being a school teacher, and I found an opportunity with a company out of California, actually Ontario, that they saw that I had a good work ethic and they were going to create some railroad offloading agriculture here. And they asked me if I would go into business with them, and they would help me go into business with my own trucking company. And I did that till 1995. And I just got tired of it. I got very, very competitive. I was working for the same amount per tonnage-wise, hauling per tonnage-wise in 1994 that I was in 1984 to 1986. And I just got to where, also, like I said, it was a tough life. Wore my dad down pretty good, and I wanted to be around for my kids. And so I just went in one day, and me and my wife said, well, you know what, let's sell it. Let's try something different. And I sold it. Didn't really make any money. It was kind of a wash, actually, a push, I guess, for casino terms. But then I didn't really do anything for about 6 months, and other than did a few jobs here and there. I had some equipment I did a few jobs with. And then my wife says, well, you probably need to find something a little more steady. And I said, yeah. So, you know, I always like the entertainment business. And they had just opened up Gila River, the small casino. And the sprung structure had only been open for about 6 months. And I went out there, and I knew those guys. I lived in between Auction and Gila River all my life, and I know individuals on both sides. And I remember a guy named John Giff. He was the HR person at the front door, and I had not known John for years. And John says, well, we don't really have anything other than maintenance. I really didn't want to push rent, ranches anymore. I didn't want to do that kind of work. Nothing wrong with it. I just wanted to find something different. And he says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, I do have one position open for security. Would you be interested in that? I said, John, I've never worked security in my life. He says, we'll teach you. I said, okay. And then if you'll teach me, I'll learn how to do it. So John Giff, no longer with us, he's the one that gave me the opportunity. He was an HR recruiter or something like that. I can't remember. He stayed with the casino for a number of years. And he says, so I went to work as a security officer. My first job was working graveyard. Now, mind you, I had never worked graveyard in my life. Now, I worked late in the night. I worked till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, but I've never actually got up and worked graveyard all night long. And that was probably the most difficult experience I ever had in my life. First of all, I never wore a uniform. I always wore Levi's and a blue shirt and work boots to work. And so they sent me downtown Phoenix in a uniform. And says you need to report to Stephen King. I thought that was kind of strange. You're going to report to Stephen King in graveyard.
At the graveyard shift.
From the graveyard shift.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I walked in there, and I interviewed, like I said, and I knew the couple of guys that were on the panel. Randy Stone and Brian Davis. You know, I handled those for most of my life, and they were thought it was kind of strange. I was even interviewing, but I said, hey guys, let's try something different. I said, okay. But anyway, I went down to Phoenix, got my uniform, and I walked in. This is Stephen King. Stephen King, a little guy, stature, but one of the nicest guys you ever met in your life. He was my very, very first supervisor. And I worked graveyard about as long as I could, and I went to the powers to be. I said, look, guys, I love working here, and I think I might be able to stick around for a while. Now, mind you, I had never held a job for any other than contract work in my life, ever. I had never worked by the hour in my life, and that was a very different situation. But I went to him. I said, look, you guys got to get me on days. I got a family, and I just can't. I can't stay up all night, sleep all day. And I was 35 at that time. And I said, my younger years, I might have been able to do that. So they put me on day shift. Willard Antone was my first supervisor on day shift. I remember, I have a pretty good memory. So I worked there, and I just worked my way up. I worked to assistant supervisor, and then I worked to supervisor, and then I went to a manager, and assistant director, and then there was some restructuring with some management that came in, and then I went to back down to a manager after some restructuring. And then Willard, I had kind of followed him and worked with him. He ended up being the director, but he subsequently left. He was a tribal member. He was there for a number of years. And so they asked me to be the assistant director, the interim director for a while. And I said, sure, I can handle it. We had a big staff. Gila River had three different casinos, and just our security staff was right north of 300 staff members. So it was pretty good size on three different facilities. We had managers at each site, shift managers and so forth. I apologize. And so I held that position. I acquired that position in 1999. And, It was the infancy of tribal gaming, and in the infancy, a lot of guys came and left, and the Gila River, I was the director of security, so whenever a CEO departed, I was the one that handled all the logistics, like I used to in trucking. I went and got them and helped them pack and walked them to their vehicle and stuff. So they were getting ready to release their sixth CEO in 9 years. And board of directors called me, and they said, well, we're going to need your assistance here. I said, yeah, I said, I understand the drill. I said, no, not a problem. I said, and they said, well, wait a minute. I said, well, what? He says, we want you to be the interim CEO. Now, I've always had an upward progression in my life. I had never planned on being a director of security. Not that I didn't like it. And it's not that it's not an upper mobility, but I wanted to still continue to move on. My goal at some point was to be a direct general manager at a casino. And they told me, well, we'd like for you to be interim CEO until we start the search. And I said, well, let me go home and think about it. I said, I'm going to tell you yes, but I have some things I want to talk to you about, but let me really think about it. So I came back the next day, and I said, look, I said, absolutely. I said, I'll never hurt the business. And I said, I know enough about this business, because one of the benefits of being in security, and I'm learning this through my career, a lot of guys that are general managers now and CEOs, they start off in security. And what gives us the benefit by that is we get to be involved in every single operation. We're involved in the HR. We're involved in CAGE. We're involved in all the
everything.
Everything. There's not one aspect that we're not involved in. Now, that doesn't mean we run it, but we get some knowledge. And you can either sit there and just go through the motions, or you can start learning about it. And I started learning about it from day one. My mobility was upwards. But there's not one single area in the entire building that you never get involved in at some level. some more than others and stuff. So anyway, I said, yeah, I should tell you what. I says, I'll do this. I says, but we have a real good group of management here. And I says, why don't you let us make a few changes? I won't make any changes. I won't do anything drastic unless I tell you. I promise you that. And they had a good level of trust in me because they used to come to our directors' meetings, and I guess I was pretty vocal and talk about making things better and stuff. So they had a pretty good idea. I mean, also knew me from prior histories and stuff. But they knew I wouldn't ever hurt the business. I wouldn't do anything stupid, I guess is the best way to say it. So I had a very good group of management. And I went to the management. I said, look, they're asking me to be the interim CEO. And I can't do it unless you guys help me. And I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to try and make us better. I said, why don't we try to do some things before they hire a new CEO? And I said, why don't we put a strategic plan together? The enterprise had never had one prior to that. I said, so why don't we point the organization in a direction? So when they hire a new CEO, at least that we have a new direction. That at least, you know, they'll come on board, or they'll come in and try to change it. Now keep in mind, we had some good guys that came through that building, or through there. It's just, you know, it's your approach. A lot of approach, and a lot of them are really good. I think they just had a hard time approaching the position where we were at. But anyway, that was September of 2004 when that had happened. So we went through, and right at that time, Tito, ticket in, ticket out, we had just implemented that. That was turning into a disaster. We had just had the table games for a year, blackjack for a year. We were still filling our way through that. So we had a lot of things going on that we had to get cleaned up real fast. It wasn't a matter of just having to do it. There wasn't any other choice. So the guys, I mean, all the directors, they got behind me. And if they hadn't, I would have probably been in trouble. But they got behind me. They seen that I didn't have a big ego. They understood that I was going to let them do their job. Just, you know, I look at it this way. My job is to get them the tools to do their job. So I held that position till February 22nd of 2005, and the board came in and said, "Well, we're gonna go ahead and open the position up." Well, about January, they said, "We're gonna open up the position up." I said, "Okay, I understand." I said, "You know, thank you for the opportunity." I said, "I really appreciate you guys letting me have this experience." And they said, "Well, no, you don't understand. We want you to interview for the position." And I said, okay, I was kind of surprised, to be honest with you. They said, if you were selected, do you think that you could do it? I said, yeah. I said, with this management group that I have, absolutely. So they interviewed a lot of people. I mean, they interviewed 10 or 12 from all over the United States. And, quite frankly, I honestly thought they would hire somebody, I don't know, more qualified guys. I just thought they would hire somebody different. And I interviewed for the position, and then they come in and they offered me the position. I was surprised, but I wasn't surprised because we had started to accomplish a lot of things. But I didn't find out until a couple of years later that actually the board had went back to all the management and talked to them. I didn't know. No one ever told me until a couple of years later. And asked what they felt about me having the job. And I guess what they told him is, look, Harold may not be the most qualified. He may not be, but he's probably the best person for the position. One of the things that he knows how to do is help us get things done. And I was very proud of that. And here again, I didn't know that, though. It was like 2 or 3 years later, and one of the board members had shared that with me. Nobody had never shared that with me, and that was it was a pretty good experience. Kind of helped the ego a little bit because I didn't know that. So during that time, there was a great appetite for the tribal council to look at some development. While the casinos weren't that old, the design probably wasn't the where they needed to be. New comp actually just started. There needed to be some expansion. The building that we're in was not conducive for expansion. They were also getting, I don't want to say old, but they were getting dated a little bit. So we looked at some either renovating what we had already or building new facilities, and the decision was made to build new facilities. And we started that process in late 2005, the actual discussions, putting the pen and paper, drawing diagrams with a pencil and going from there. And then we started off with about a $200 million project with the Wild Horse Pass and the Long Butte. And it ended up going to about $360 million with FF&E. So from late 2005, then 2008, we opened Long Butte. And then 2009, we opened Wild Horse Pass. And we opened two casinos right in the middle of a recession. And I can remember the news media saying, well, why are you guys opening them in the middle of a recession? Well, it wasn't a recession when we started. It's a recession now. So what are you going to do? Can't just stop.
Yeah, because it took a couple of years to build it, right? So
Yeah. So, we got beat up a lot. Well, why are they building these casinos? Because the middle of recession and all this tragedy is going on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hell, sure. What do? I mean, so we opened them and we stayed pretty flat. We didn't go a tremendous amount. I mean, we didn't go down at all, but we didn't really spike it like we thought we were going to, because it was a pretty tough time, especially in Phoenix. The housing market was brutal. I don't know if there's anybody I don't know that didn't get affected by the housing market in some form or another.
Yeah.
So we were able to do that. We built a corporate structure. When I took over in 2004, we had just hired our first general manager. That was John Cirincione, and that was the first general manager that the casino ever had, because the CEO was kind of the general manager CEO for all of them. And he was the first general manager. He was there for about 3 years. Very intelligent individual. I learned a lot from John. Gaming overall. He's actually been at Santa Ana Star right down the road from me for, I think 7-8 years now. Maybe he'd be going on 9 years. Mm. But John was a very smart guy, and I learned a lot from him. Then for about 2 years after that, he held that one, but I was kind of the – still the CEO over all three, and then general manager for Wild Horse and Long Butte. And then we created a corporate structure where we had general managers at each site. We had marketing structure at each site, more of a adult on property, making sure each one ran in a proper manner. And then, so it was a very good experience. You know, 2010, it was a very amicable separation. It's tribal gaming. I am forever, ever indebted to Gila River. If they had not given me an opportunity and not opened the door for me, I don't know what would have happened, but I do know what happened, and it was a very, very, very good experience. Actually, I saw a number of those individuals at NIGA and talked to them. But that was probably one of the hardest things I'd ever had to deal with in my life, but it was probably one of the best things that had ever happened to me, because I ended up, there's something very, very good to stay for when someone stays at one place for a long, long time, but also there's some opportunity if you don't, and that's how I had to look at it. So I went to California for a short time. I actually went back to finish my degree up. I was getting close to 48, I believe, 49, and I've always promised my mom I would finish my degree, her being a school teacher. So I was finishing my degree up, and I went worked at a small casino for a short time, and I actually learned a lot there. I try to learn something wherever place I go and make it beneficial, because being a CEO at Gila River, I never got into the weeds a lot. It was more from strategy, vision. Here I was able to get more in a slot on analytics and some other areas. And there for a short time, and then I went to a Indian Head Casino in Oregon, and that was a great experience. Very, very nice people. A little bit bigger property than what was in California. Then I got to hone skills a little bit more and more. Started to get a little bit more intricately involved in the marketing side, the database side. I had a pretty good database background. I had a lady taught me years ago. Her name was Karen Brongberg. Unfortunately, no longer with us, but she's probably one of the smartest ladies I've ever dealt with when it comes to database. She taught me the importance of database and direct mail. So I got to delve a little bit more. Actually, when I went got the Indian Head, there wasn't even a database program. They didn't have a direct mail program. They didn't have anything. All they had was you could get $5 free play once a month, and you had to download it off of the internet. So we created that entire program from the ground up. There about 2 years, and then I'm from Southwest. Loved Oregon, some of the most beautiful places in the world. But about 4 months out of the year, you're frozen to the ground. And being from the Southwest, yeah. 2013 I went there. 2014 they had 28 inches of snow in 24 hours. Now,
oh my God,
a true statement. I had never seen snow fall in my life, ever. Now, I've seen it on the ground after it fell, but I've never seen it. My wife's 5'4", and I have some pictures with the snow up to her waist. And it was good, though. I kind of liked it, though. You kind of like the snow when it falls the first few times, but then when it starts to pile up on the windows, then you kind of like, oh, my God. Yeah, one day, we stayed in the house for 3 days. I was driving to work one day, I had a pickup, and it had 16 below. I said, my thing must be broken. And it was 16 below. And I got a call from a recruiter to come back out Southwest. I had always told individuals that at Indian Head, if I got that opportunity, I was going to do that. I have my wife, part Native American Hispanic. She has six brothers and brothers and three sisters. Big family. I have a small family on my side, just me and my sister and my mom, but she's really very family oriented. So I got the opportunity to come get back closer back to home. So I was given the opportunity at Isleta, and I went and interviewed for there. I really like where I'm at. One is, while I'm the CEO, I still get to be involved in a lot of the operations, not from a micromanaged standpoint, but more from a learning. I'm a learner. I learn all the time. And it's a very unique experience. I have a lake of RV park, a lake, fishing lakes, RV park. I have a 27-hole golf course. I don't get to play in it, but I get to watch it out my window. I just don't have the time. We have a fun connection. I have a great resort, showroom. So it's an overall compliment. And the people there are really good. They're people very extremely rich in culture. Their culture trumps everything, which I fully respect and admire that. It trumps business. It trumps everything. It takes priority. But they have the feast. You go out to the feast, and they just invite you into their home and say, come on in, let's go eat. My administrative assistant is a tribal elder, and she, every time we go out there, come on, we got to go to the house and eat. And we sit in these adobe houses, and we eat. And it's a great experience. But what they did is, the property was getting a little outdated. It was, when I got there in 2015, it had been 15 years old. They had went to the Hard Rock brand. That didn't last no more than a couple of years, and they came back. So the only real type of renovation or upgrade they had done is when they went to the old, and Hard Rock went back to the old. So I, the council approached me and said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, we do need a decent uplift, probably a facelift. I said, I don't know. I said, let's take a look at it. Let's get a feasibility study. One of the major problems that we have a beautiful showroom that holds 2,300, but it's also doubled as a bingo. I don't know if there's been anybody that's really successful in that, because what happens is that every 2 weeks, and bingo players love them to death, but you know, you don't want to disrupt their world and their lives. So what we did is did a study, and we had to put I don't know, we're probably running out of time, so I'll hurry up here.
So what
we did is commission the feasibility study, see what it would do to put the bingo outside next to the building. Just create an addition. One of the major problems that I had was, like last weekend, I had a 1,000-seat Governor's Ball, the State of Mexico Governor's Ball at Felipe Esparza. I had about 4 events going on, and probably had close to 3,000 to 4,000 people in the building, but we couldn't service them. And we don't do that a lot, but it does happen. But even in concerts, it was very hard servicing them. So we looked at the food and beverage component of it, and that's primarily, other than bingo and the showroom, is what we're really focused on. The showroom needed an uplift, an upgrade desperately, so we upgraded the showroom, and we put a bingo hall, 500-seat bingo hall, right next to the building, but by itself. We have, I don't really want to call it a nightclub, but I guess it is our nightclub. We call it Triple Sevens, but it's more of a country and western, classic rock and roll, 35 and up, you know, whiskey and beer drinkers. Not a real fancy place, but it was, and it only held about 135, and we were packing it every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday. So we created another 777 that holds over 500 now. And if you ever get the opportunity, please come out there and look at it. We're proud. Not real fancy. It's kind of like a Gillies type of atmosphere in Las Vegas.
Sure.
By no means is it Gillies, or are we trying to be Gillies? But
Gillies,
it's kind of that
yeah.
country and western, sawdust on the floor, stuff like that. But what we did was, and all those so far have been out to be a massive success. We went from about 150 to, on a real, real, real good day in the bingo, to where we're doing close to 400 to 500, about 400 a day in bingo. And we put up a matinee and an evening session. The 777s now, I've never worked in a facility where the alcohol sales were so high. And we do it legally. I mean, but it's just where we can get more volume in there. And then we restructured the alcohol facility inside of the showroom, and that's really has kicked off. So we're just, our next project, we'll start sports betting probably in July. We have a temporary area in the center of the casino where we're going to open up sports betting and in a temporary facility. Most people are aware, it's already started in New Mexico at Santa Ana Star and Buffalo Thunder. We got the Pueblo was just a little more methodical about approaching it, wanted to make sure that everything was right, which I respect that. So we are looking probably late July of getting that open. And then probably in September we'll have our permanent facility, because we're restructuring our food and beverage. We don't have a buffet. We do a buffet on occasional basis and out of one of our restaurants, but we don't have all of our competitors have them, but I think the business model that we're creating has worked. I've worked before, and we're not having one. But we are looking for some amenities, some extra draws. So we have our own brand, which is called Chili Rista, and then we're downsizing that. But then and that should open probably August, we're thinking. And then we've already inked the deals for the a Panda Express. Well, Panda Express is not a unique, but it's a creature comfort, everybody knows that. And then also Fatburger. It's not a proposal. It's something that's already in the works. So the signs are already being ordered. So we hope it'll be the only Fatburger that's in New Mexico, that's ever been in New Mexico. We did that here in Arizona, and we were extremely successful. So after that, and I hope it was in September, but right there, you know, we're moving along. We're getting some things done. New Mexico's is a tough market. You know, I got 1.2 million people, and I got about 8,000, close to 9,000 gaming positions, and it's a competitive grind on a daily basis. It's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah. Always trying to get in. Should we take some calls?
Yeah.
Should we take some calls? Yeah, let's take some calls. Hello, this is
Hi, this is Larry.
You have a. Hey, Larry, how are you? Do you have a question for
Harold? Hey, good. Yeah, Harold. Good story. I was wondering, I work in database marketing myself, and I wondered, I'm always curious, as you were talking about your appreciation for database and about all the other amenities you have and sportsbook coming on board. And what are your, if any, do you have any efforts to capture the player's non-gaming spend or other wagering spend and to get a holistic value of the customer?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that. We are converting over to a new slot system. We're actually converting over to IGT, and the deal has already been cut, and actually have our first kickoff meeting next week, and we hope to have installation in probably the latter part of September, October. I know we've been doing everything in September now. But what we're going to do is we're going to have what we call a one card or a resort card. We haven't figured out what we're going to call it yet because we do have to change all our cards. When you change slot system, all your cards have to get changed. So I apologize. I'm a little under the weather.
No, that's
okay.
What
we're going to do, Larry, is,
no problem.
What we're going to do is, and we're not inventing it. It's like Palazzo. I'm going to put a value to every point of sale. Every micros that we have, we're going to have some kind of a value to it. I haven't determined that yet, or we haven't determined that. Obviously, the highest value, you know, for instance, I'm just using arbitrary numbers here. They're not. So if I have 100 points, if I spend a dollar, I get a point, okay? I'm just using arbitrary numbers. So if I spend a dollar in a slot machine, I get a point. And maybe if I do a round of golf, I get a half a point. If I do if I fish at the lakes, maybe I get a quarter of a point. So we haven't worked on that calculation yet. We're going to work with IGT to help us. But every point of sale, we're going to have a reward. Now, the only downfall of that is we do have a lot of – we have the lakes and we have some of the fun connection. That's going to be – we can't tie it to the Players Club card because can't tie it to the Players Club card because they have to be 21 over to have a card. But we've been in our group, we've been talking about this for 2 years, and so absolutely, that's going to be one of our selling points. Nobody else in New Mexico will have that, so that's going to be one of our selling points. Hey, go over here and play fish in our lakes, and you'll be able to gain points at the casino. And so absolutely, that's how we're going to do that.
Good deal. Thanks.
It's great.
Yeah.
Did you have any other questions, Larry?
Well, I just wondered, you mentioned sportsbook, the casino industry has a demo that's getting a little older now, and we're going to have to start looking how that we can get some new younger folks interested in gaming. And do you have any plans or any kind of interest in pursuing esports?
You know, I just saw an advertisement for that today, and yes, we have a considerable amount of convention space, meeting space, and what I would like to do, I saw an advertisement, but I'm not going to be able to make it. I would like to try that in our resort side because you're going to skew to the younger demographic, but there, if I have all that food and beverage on that side of the building. But I think we all are going to need to take a look at that. We're just going to have to figure out how we're going to make money on it. I don't know if it's going to be putting it on ourselves. I don't know if it's going to be attracting those companies that do that and bring them to the facility. But absolutely, I think we all are probably going to need to look at that at some point or another. Because these guys, you know, hell, you can go get a scholarship to go play a video game now. I saw that on TV. I forgot what school it was back east, but. Yeah. So yeah, and somebody's thinking really big out there, and about how that's going to go. So I mean, these guys are quitting grade school and going and becoming millionaires. So absolutely.
There you go. Thanks so much, Steve. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Take care. See if we got another question here. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Harold?
Hey, Tino and Harold. This is Nick Lawson. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Good, good. I also have, I'm under the weather a little bit, so if I cough at you, I apologize ahead of time. Hey, Harold, I don't think I've ever met you, but, man, listening to your story, it seems like I've known you for a long time. I worked in down in Maricopa and lived there for a couple of years myself.
Where at?
You may not have known at the time because you moved away, or I don't know when you left there, but by Canna Park, you know, they built a Walmart there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still own a home here. My mom's still here, so I'm here quite frequently. So even though I've moved away, I've never officially left completely.
I used to take the dirt roads over the railroad tracks to work every day, but I don't know if they're there anymore, but it brings back memories. Crazy.
When was this?
I was there in 08, and I left in 2010.
Yeah, all the Kelly yards are all gone away. They're all down in Stanfield now.
Holy crap.
Stuff here and stuff. Yeah, there's no... And then the housing market, you left in 010, so that when the housing market was dipping here. So it's building back up. Yeah, they're building homes like crazy now. And the traffic is just as bad. They almost had that bridge built. They were probably talking about that bridge when you were here. But they're about 6 months away from getting that big old ugly bridge built over the railroad tracks.
I'm down here in Eagle Pass, and Scott Eldridge and his team was down in Phoenix. Last few days. So they were telling me how different it is, and I couldn't believe it. Hey, well,
yeah.
I'll tell you, Harold, like, you're definitely an example of the right career finding, man. You were doing everything else but what you're doing now when you're a young guy, huh?
Yeah. Well, it all relates. You know, we're in the gaming business. While I think we do a very important job, I mean, we're not curing cancer, we're not brain surgery. It's about treating people right and being able to just motivating them to help you get what you want to get done and have a good team around you. You can't do all this yourself. And I've seen a lot of micromanagers in my career, and they never succeed. And so letting the people around you help you be successful. I'm only successful as the people around me.
I agree. How did you learn marketing analytics from the background you had?
I learned the importance of it. There's two phases. I learned the importance of it. And there was a lady, her name was Karen Bromberg. And she had a company called ROI. She went with another company, and she went back, and she one of the companies she worked for was actually our first marketing agency that Gila River ever had. And she became real good friends, and she just taught me. Played a lot of golf with her. She was 115 pounds and could outdrive us all. That's a true story. She played on the LPGA. She was a great lady. Unfortunately, she passed of cancer in 2013, I believe. Anyway, she just taught me the importance of it and why it's so crucial. She didn't really teach me a lot about the details of it. Where I really learned the details of it was from another gentleman that I work with. His name is James June, NOA Analytics. And he now has got me into the weeds and showed me the actual how that relates, how it doesn't relate. We live in a world in New Mexico of free play, so we really have to be very, very careful about the Theo side of it because it skews it quite a bit. And then they talked to him about the handle pulls and the time on device and all the different elements that go into it. In my opinion, and here again, I probably know just enough to be dangerous, but not enough to make a a good intelligent decision on my own. But think about the Theo side when you, when we all were coined, there was no free play. You know, it was pretty black and white. Now it's free play. Man, it throws another caveat into it. Especially if you live where I do, where it is so high. The investment, free play investment rate is outrageous, but we have to do that to stay competitive. Now, I cut it back almost in half to what it was when I first got there, and actually raised EBITDA. But so that's why I've learned it. I look at the numbers from a macro viewer on a daily basis, and I see that number going back and forth, and then it's relative to our win for the day. But I'm not that smart, so I've had people to teach me that.
Well, you know, the people are the most humble are usually the smartest. I tell you that. Your family's deeply rooted in the Maricopa, Phoenix area. How'd you get them to move out to California and across the country with you? What's your secret sauce?
Very carefully.
Well, this is the deal. When I was asked to be CEO, I got married young. Like I said, I was 19. And then we didn't start having kids until I was 23. So when I was 9, when I had become CEO in 2005, officially, I was an interim in 2004. But when I came to CEO, when I was 2005, that was my oldest son's, that was the year he graduated from high school. So he went off to college, and then I was in Gila River 2010. But, I was getting close to 50 years old, and it was either that or change another career. There was not another casino in Arizona at the time that really that had a position, the general manager or management position. So I had to go start searching. It hasn't been easy. It's been tough, to be honest with you. It's just me and my wife. It's much, much harder on her than it is me because, like I said, she has 5 sisters and 3 brothers. Her mother and father are still alive here. So I lived in Ahwatukee for a little bit, but in this general area, I lived here for 51 years. It gets a little tough every once in a while. And that's why we were trying to get back to the Southwest. You know, we said, let's at least try to get back to the Southwest where at least we're a day from home instead of 2 days. When I was in Central Oregon, we would drive every once in a while. Flew most of the time, but sometimes we would have to drive for certain reasons. And that was a 2-day drive. That was brutal. So you're 2 days here, you're 2 days back, so 4 days of just driving. Here I can make it from Albuquerque here in about six and a half hours. So it's not easy. It's not easy on my wife. But, you know, I'm 58. I'm not going to change another career right now. Gaming's been very good to us. I'm mentoring in a tribal member right now. I think she's going to be on Tino's show here. It's probably
she's amazing.
She's a lot smarter than I was when I started. I tell you what.
She's amazing.
Yeah. And what she's
going to
do.
Adriana Giron, right?
So I got about 2 more years with her, right at 2 years. She's very good, and it's not going to take her long to catch on. As far as intelligent wise, she knows how to do it. It's more of day to day operations and how you deal with all the situations. So then I'll be right at 60 years old, and I haven't really looked past. Well, I've been looking a little past that a little bit. I'll probably try to. And I hate to say that because every time someone doesn't have a job, they call themselves a consultant. But I guess I shouldn't have said that. But I think I have enough knowledge and experience that I could probably go out and help some people. I stopped trying to get rich a long time ago. All I'm looking for is a good, healthy life where I can help people. So that's probably what I'm going to do after that. And that way my wife, she gets to come back home and I get to leave her once in a while, go do some work and come back. So I know that was a long answer to your question, but it's not easy.
No, it's not.
I actually, nope. When my kids were young, I had an opportunity here in Arizona to go be a general manager at a smaller casino, a real small casino, and I couldn't convince them to go. They were in mid-high school. And if they were in high school now, I wouldn't be able to do it. So it's tough. Yeah.
Oh, great, Nate. Thank you so much. Great questions.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's tough when you got to move around. This is Tino Magnetta. Have Harold Boggess. Do you have a question for him?
Yeah, hey, it's Rogelio out in North Dakota.
How are you, Rogelio?
Good, good, good. Hey, Harold.
You were just in Phoenix, right? You were just in,
yeah.
in Maricopa.
Yeah, I was
yeah.
there. Yeah, I was there this weekend. I'm also an Arizona native, Harold, so I know how it feels to go from Arizona to a cold climate because I'm here in close to Fargo, North Dakota. It's just as freezing. Actually, all the snow is barely melting here. Yeah. I do got a question about you mentioning going to different places. Well, you mentioned something like about it says something good or it's something good to stay at one location for a long time, but at the same time, it's not, and how you learn something new at each property you went to. I'm starting to see that as well. What was your, I don't want to say favorite, but what was your eye opener or what was the new thing that you learned by going to a different property that maybe boost your career or opened your eyes more or just gave you a little bit more experience in your position? Do you have a certain location or a certain, something that you really enjoyed learning at a new property?
Well, it's like this. Like I said, when I was at Gila River, I didn't start off as a general manager. So, and I learned from people around me. Like I said, I mentioned John Sears the only while ago, and I learned a tremendous mm-hmm. amount from him. So, but when you're the CEO of a large organization like that, we're three different casinos, 2,700 machines, and 2,400 employees. So, you have to, you're at a very high level of decision making, and you don't get in the weeds a lot. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, my career was a little backwards, so I wasn't in the weeds a lot, and I've never been a micromanager, but so you have that overall view. So when I went mm-hmm. to the smaller casino, in some respects it was actually harder. I was at a small casino in Northern California. And some respects, it was actually harder because I hadn't worked on all the analytics. I was involved in some of the slot machine purchases in Gila River and some of the other high-level corporate sponsorships and a lot of those other things. So when I got into the Northern California, I actually had to start analyzing slot machines. And I wasn't very proficient at it, and I had to get some help. And I knew the basics. I knew the time on device. I knew the coin in. I knew the handle pulls and number of jackpots. I knew the basics, but really getting to understand why am I losing money on a slot machine? You should never lose money on a slot machine, not for a long period of time. So I started getting heavily involved. Like I said, it was a smaller casino, and I got to involve in small promotions and how those small promotions work, what was working and what wasn't working. And so I had to develop an entirely different mentality that forced me to learn different things, even though it wasn't, and one of the, especially the older I get, bigger is not always better. Sometimes smaller is harder. A lot of times smaller is harder. And so, working there, I learned, the interesting, now I was very, very proficient already on the HR side, very proficient, on the financial side and on some of those other marketing slot database I wasn't real proficient in. I still don't do it a lot, but I have a better understanding of what to look for and what not to look for. So then when I went to Oregon, it was a little bit bigger property. But what you learn, and you're learning this now, I guarantee you're learning it. You were at Cliff Castle, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I promise you're learning this without even talking to you. It's a totally different market. It's a totally different approach. So it hones your skills to look at different things differently. There is nothing wrong. There's some guys that have been extremely successful at being at places for 10, 15 years. I would never say that that is a downfall, because every individual is different. I think we would all like to stay someplace for all of our career where we wouldn't have to move around and have different houses and all this stuff. But you're able to look at things differently. So every place that I've worked at has been totally different. Now, the operational side is the same, but how you market, how you promote is different to each one of those demographics. Man, I was completely lost when I got to New Mexico the first 3 or 4 months. I was lost. When I saw the amount of free play that was flooding the market, it's like, okay. And I took a big risk. I had an analyst come in. Like I said, James June, he came in. And we sat down and went over this. And then not too long after I got there, I hired a director of marketing, Jackie March. And we mulled this over, and we made some mistakes at the beginning, because you can only buy business for so long.
Right.
And that's what everybody in that market was trying to do. And we create a different point structure. You have to, what it forces you to go out, when you're having problems like that, it forces you to go out and look at every single aspect. Now, I'm not saying the Phoenix market is easier, but you have more there. I'm not saying the San Diego or Portland market is easier, but when you make more money, it covers up a lot more mistakes. When you make less money, you can't cover nothing up. I'm not trying to cover up anything. I'm just saying that they're exposed more. So, you know, if someone is ever on the edge of saying, well, should I go out and look for something different? I would just say from a learning standpoint, especially if you're young, from a learning standpoint, because now you're able to approach situations differently. I draw from Arizona. I draw from California. I draw from Oregon when I'm dealing with issues in New Mexico. So that's kind of what I meant by that. But by no means would I ever say that it's wrong for someone to stay forever, because it's not.
Right. Yeah. No. I totally understand that. The market is completely different everywhere you go sometimes. So. I don't know if I have time. Let me see. Another question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like
one
you saw
more.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people out there that's seen their fair share of construction and renovations and whatnot. We went through one here. It's funny. I just asked this question to a fellow coworker or at a business meeting or something. What was your construction nightmare, or what was your biggest hurdle in construction or renovation, and how did you if you don't mind sharing that, and how did you get over it?
One of the biggest problems that we had when we started this is we didn't have as-built. And when we started peeling the walls back, we found a lot of things. The building was built in 2000. So one of the things when we started peeling the walls back is a lot of, one is we didn't have as-built, and we tore up a few things until we could figure it out a little bit better. Also, one of the biggest problems that you find, that we're finding, is construction codes change. So if you haven't done anything in 20 years, those construction codes are totally different, but there's a lot of difference. And one of the biggest issues that we're doing right now is seismic restrictions, earthquake restrictions. So there's some things that we are doing, and we're not doing it because we didn't factor those costs in. For instance, ceiling tiles, we're having to go in and spend, in some cases, well, one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to make a decision on the casino floor, because if I have to go and change the casino floor, it's going to cost me an extra $500,000. Because to meet the seismic codes. Now, if I don't take them down, then I don't have to do it. We had a lot of fire codes that have changed. So when you start peeling those walls back, you have to start putting more fire protection. Which, look, it's safety of the people. I had no problem with that. But that's one of the major problems that I'm finding with an older building. Because when you start peeling those walls off, you have to have them inspect them before you can put them back up. And then what's happening is, there's some costs back there. You couldn't factor in, because you didn't know what was back there. So my recommendation to anybody is make sure that you have a bigger contingency just on a code requirements. And everybody is getting more and more restrictive on code requirements, following them. The Pueblo has their own code officer, and he is very restrictive, which I don't blame him. I have no problem with that, but it is affecting our budget considerably.
Great.
And
thanks so much.
No problem.
Thanks so much, Rahul. I appreciate it.
Yep.
I think we have time for one more. Let's try
Sure.
it. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Harold?
Yes, my name is Nancy, and I'm actually calling from Albuquerque. And I was just wondering, with Albuquerque being such a competitive market with so many casinos in the area, what do you feel is the biggest advantage for Miss Letta or your disadvantage?
The disadvantage first is what I'm finding in Albuquerque is everybody says we're so far away. I grew up in the Phoenix market. It's in Portland for quite a while, and the traffic is not as near as bad any place in New Mexico as it is any place. That's one of the biggest stigmas that we face. And well, it's too far. We don't want to go. And we're also dealing with some traffic issues. If you, what part of Albuquerque are you from?
I'm actually northeast.
Okay. So right there on the 25 from Gibson all the way through Rio Bravo up to where we're at, where the traffic's been, they've been working on that exit for 2 years now. I think they have another year or something like that. So when you come to us in the evening, if you're coming that way in the evening, right in front of our casino, which is a good thing, 17,000 cars pass a day. About 25 to 35 on a busy day, go down 25. So traffic's hurting us, and people, there's a perception, too far out there, I don't want to go out there. Another disadvantage is we have a lot of casinos. It's pretty unrestrictive. We built our renovation, and I didn't add one slot machine. I didn't need slot machine. Our advantage is going to be, one is we're right in the middle of developing a customer service. You're from Albuquerque. You know, it's a very relationship demographic, which is a very good thing. So one of the things that we're working on tremendously is to enhance our customer service program and then also enhance our product. We're going to have a product, and it's not going to be any place in New Mexico, which it doesn't sound like a lot. I know they put Five Guys in there. Five Guys is pretty common, but Fat Burger's not, and I think once we get that promoted, we get that out there, people are really going to draw to that. We've got just about every amenity that you can possibly imagine. We have the lakes, we have the RV park, we have all that there. I still say there's nobody in the Southwest that has as many amenities that we have. And then what's going to be our big advantage is once we get our new slot system in September, to be able to reward every point of sale. Wherever there is a point of sale, we're going to be able to reward anybody over 21. We struggle because everybody else drive. You can drive by Sandia, you can drive by Santa Ana Star, but you have to drive to us. If you're familiar with that area, if you're northeast. Okay, so, I mean, Bernalillo, I mean, you go down by Santa Ana Star, it's, even though they're dealing with traffic issues too. So I think our advantage is going to be the fact that we're going to have just about every amenity that you can possibly imagine. We're looking at some future things that haven't been announced yet, but we're not finished. Like I said, we won't be finished with this renovation. And we're going to have some things that New Mexico has never seen, or the Albuquerque market's never seen.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I look forward to any announcements or anything that you guys advertise for the projects you guys are working on. And I appreciate your time, Harold. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Appreciate it. Harold, it's been fantastic. You've been a great on the show. You got some great stories and perfect example of, you know, how you can make your way to the top and still work hard when you get there and do great things. So I appreciate you being on the show and looking forward to having you back on.
Okay. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Harold. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Great interview. So next week, I think it's Monday, I have Henry Childs. He's the GM of Desert Diamond, again in Phoenix. And it's going to be fantastic. Can't wait to have him on. Him and I had a long conversation about tribal gaming and succession and all that stuff. So it's going to be fantastic. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you on Monday.